Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at this republic of inequality. Most importantly, we are the podcast of hope. We look at the solutions. I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and joined as always by my co-host, alter ego, Tony Groves. Tony, how are you? Interesting times.
It's been an absolute car crash of a campaign, but it actually, the results that it's thrown up, Simon McGarr used the word today, earthquake, and it is politically an earthquake. No matter what happens now on Sunday morning when the votes are counted, things have changed utterly. People want that a third valve. More importantly, actually, guys, this is your fourth podcast in about 5 days, Rory, yeah?
It is, Tony,
and it's about my 15th or something like that. Guys, we can't keep doing this without some support. Please come over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Price of a cup of coffee.
And thank you to those who are. We have had an increase in patron support.
But we're still not viable.
We're not viable, and we really want to put that out there. And, you know, we feel we haven't been emphasising enough. I know Tony's been banging on about it, but I just really want to back him up on that. It's not viable. And we need the money to come in, guys, to keep it going. So without further ado, we'll welcome our guest tonight, and we'll have to work hard to keep calm and stay sitting. We are joined by the inimitable, indomitable Diane of Ireland, Emmett Kerwin. Welcome to the pod again.
Thanks for having us. Diane is...
I have no fucking idea what it means. I just thought of you and I went, Diane. He has to be a Diane.
Surely he can't be serious.
He means Diane,
don't
I believe.
Call me Sherry.
Good to see you, buddy. How are you
good
keeping?
Emmett, we're, I was thinking there on the way in, I was going, well, I ask him, who are you going to slag off when Leo loses?
I actually have done quite well of not using kind of, I've been very careful to kind of, because everything becomes in Britain and America, identity politics, and becomes then personality of politics of personality. I think I've been quite good at kind of, you know, not actually going personal with anybody. You know what I mean? There's a real kind of thing. I think we've talked about this before in Ireland. You know, people care more about manners in Ireland than they do about corruption. And there's always a kind of aspect, even when people are being, you know, they have a boot on their neck, they're saying you still have to be polite to the person who's oppressing you. Now, obviously, oppression is a word that's used around the world kind of quite easily. And obviously, we live in a liberal democracy. We live in a safe democracy. It's safer probably than it's ever been. You know, obviously, there's a rise in crime. So when we say things like that, you know, about oppression, there's different types of structural oppression. So I'm always very kind of wary of kind of attacking politicians on their, personally or going after them. The only time I was like, Leo Varadkar was when he mentioned that thing about the owning a house. And this was just recently on Twitter, and I couldn't get my head around it. Now, someone actually pointed out to me, they said, well, he was actually talking about the aspirational quality of how good it is to own a house and wanting to own a house. But as I said to somebody on Twitter, I said, you telling somebody you own a house and then telling a whole electorate that you're trying to engage with how good it is to own a house isn't the same as saying, and I want that for you too. If you've created an economic and political situation where that is beyond the reach of 18 to 35 year olds or even 18 to 50 year olds, you're not telling them, I want the same for you. You're just telling them, it's like telling a hungry person, have you ever tried steak? No, I have. Great. You know what I mean? And then not saying, I want you to have steak too. So the kind of, we're going to hear a lot about kind of, and we already have done, you know, the Republic of Opportunity, but they've kind of bedded that one now. They haven't used it this election round because it didn't really work the last time. But equality of opportunity is the one that we're going to hear a lot about. And this kind of idea that everybody in the Republic has the same equality of opportunity, but we know, and you work in education, you know what I mean? You know, this isn't true. You know, you can come from two very different, contrasting starting points. And you don't have the same opportunity as everybody else. Some people will start 500 meters ahead of you. You know what I mean? So it's a better quality of outcome.
Yeah, and I think it's really what struck me about the election was that, yes, you know, Leo Varadkar has lost it for Fine Gael at a certain level. But in a way, what, you know, the issues that I and others were banging on about for years around the housing in particular, that what it showed to me was the gap between their understanding of what most people's lives are.
Yeah.
Like the privileged circles that they live in and how disconnected they are from the reality. And I think that, that housing thing and the home ownership aspiration was like, because even if he did say, which he has said, you know, I want home ownership for everybody, it's a myth. It's an illusion.
It's something that's not actually achievable.
Because his policies won't deliver it. And, you know, I suppose the big question is, do we think that even if, because we'll get on to it, because I want to discuss turnouts and what do we think actually will happen. But in terms of, Tony was talking about the earthquake there, that it did seem, okay, housing and health have been identified as the key issues. We could say the society has been put first. That whatever government is elected, there's going to be a dramatic change in a progressive direction. There will have to be, whatever government is. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think, here's the thing. The one thing about parties of the left is, even though the ideology sometimes hobbles them from working together, and the ideological purity essentially can hobble negotiations when you're forming a government, Fine Gael aren't actually led by any type of ideology. Like, if you asked any of them what their ideology is, really, it's just business first. That's it. It's kind of a loose understanding of, you know, Hayek and neoliberal kind of economics or Reaganomics, you know, this kind of way, like, or classical liberalism.
I think they do have an ideology. I think they would be quite free market and.
Well, no, they have that ideology, but I don't think any of them could actually articulate it, because when they're asked to articulate it, they never do. And I think they're very cleverly never do. They keep their ideology.
I would disagree. I would say that it's not even cleverly. I would say there's a few people who understand the ideology, and they may be advisors, or they may be the senior civil servants. or the permanent government, as we like to refer to them some quite often, but not within some of the parties. Like your Fine Gael TD around here, as I said, like, I mean, he's not fit to make toast.
It's true that
he wouldn't be able to. You know,
but there are some of them, like, I remember John Paul Phelan. Remember that car crash he did with me on the late debate, where I asked him how many affordable houses they built, and he didn't know.
And
then he said to me, I was arguing for the Vienna housing model, an increase in public housing. And he was like, he said to me, I can't remember what he said on air or off air, but he said very explicitly, we do not believe the state should play that role.
Yes.
That is a very clear ideology and a belief framework.
That is, yeah. I suppose, maybe I didn't express myself properly. Canvassers who've come, who I've talked to, essentially, the majority of that ideology, that overarching ideology of the shrinking of the state, that libertarian, neoliberal ideology of the shrinking of the state shouldn't do any of these things, privatization, austerity policies, basically primacy of the individual, that Thatcherism kind of ideology is pushed forward.
Money
in your pocket, and it's up to you, and actually it's your taxes and we're taking away. But it's kind of distilled. And a lot of it just kind of stems from a form of classism.
Yeah.
That's it. A hatred of poor people. But it is, though. It stems from the disinterest in poor people. And also those kind of canards of kind of, like, you know, stories that get replicated about the guy down the road who, like, he works as well as claims, and, you know, and then the other woman as well. Like, I've heard, you know, the story about, like, she got the St. Vincent de Paul hamper every Christmas, and then one day they knocked and they said, she's actually just on a shopping trip in New York. Like, I've heard that story from about 20 different people. Yeah. And, like, even when family members would say that, I'd say, you're replicating a lie. This is literally what a meme is, as well.
What's really frustrating about that is they're the same people then on the flip side will stand on a podium and say full employment, highest tax take in the history of the.
Yeah.
So if all of these things are true, then these people, these outliers are very infinitesimal.
And of course, the biggest lie that was found was Varadkar's very own welfare cheat us all.
Yeah.
How much money did they actually claim back from that welfare? Mm. Was it, I can't remember what.
It worked out at 0.00017% of the
and most of it was 84% was overpayments.
Yes,
so they were actually the social services were actually just overpaying people.
Situations changed, and
it's important to point out that the Department of Social Protection came out a few months later and apologised for that campaign. It's lost in
one of the senior campaigners, a woman who works for social protection, said that she didn't want it.
Yeah,
but I'd also like to say, even with that, like, and I know I've talked about it on the telly before, someone said to me, they said, you know, of course there is mechanisms to, you know, report people in the financial services. I said, yes, there is. I said, there's also a thing called a good citizens report. And I don't know if you know what that is. It's essentially, a good citizens report is if you find out that somebody you know isn't paying their taxes. You can shop them into revenue.
Mm.
But now we have a thing in this country about informers, and Catherine Connolly said that in the Dáil. You know, you obviously don't know the history. You wouldn't do it.
No. Yeah.
But you don't see Pascal Donoghue on the side of buses talking about good citizens reports, because there's an entire tax industry in this country made up by the big four, which it's an entire industry which basically allows corporations to come here, put their money beyond the revenue systems of not only developing countries, but our European allies, defunds and defrauds their welfare systems, their hospital, their schools. So what? We can enrich ourselves? Our GDP is what? It doesn't matter though. I remember reading a great quote that said, the GDP of a nation can scarcely be used to measure the welfare of that nation. Simon Kuznets said that. Mm. He's the man who invented the GDP and the GNP scale.
Mm.
And if he knows that it's a fool's errand to use the GDP scale to measure things like happiness, life quality, how well you're doing, what's the state of a nation, then these economists who essentially keep on throwing up the GDP and the GNP scale as if it's some sort of trophy they've won. And this is what's happened in most liberal democracies. We essentially use it as a measurement of how well everything is doing. So it's just tracked into that. And then they talk about full employment. You see that with Regina Doherty talking to that lady. You know, this woman, heartfelt, her name is Kelly, and she was talking on, I think it was Prime Time. She said, we both work. And our quality of life is such that we don't get time to spend with our children. We spend time traveling. We're going to have to emigrate. And what was her response? At least all those people on the train shows you how many people are working.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah, yeah. They cannot put themselves into their technocrats. Mm. They cannot put themselves into the minds of what it is to be a regular person. Because one thing, and here's the crack, especially with people like Owen Murphy, especially with people like Leo Varadkar, they don't know anybody that lives on the fault lines. They don't know anybody who's a drug addict. They don't know anybody who's at risk of becoming homeless. So they don't care. So their first-hand knowledge and first-hand experience is when they get this factoid put in front of them, which often happens, you know, they go, oh, actually, we have the fifth highest level of minimum wage.
Mm.
And I read dentist here today, yeah, but we've got the fourth highest, but we have the fifth highest number of people working on minimum wage in this country. And in order to actually just live a basic requirements of living in one of the major cities of Dublin, Galway and Cork, and I will get you the figures on this report after this podcast, you have to work 57 hours on minimum wage. So what kind of country do they want us to build or to live in? A country where there's full employment but there's no quality of life? A country where there is nowhere to live and all of your money essentially you work to the bone?
Is a fifth higher. Yeah. Is over 25% higher than the rest of the EU. The minimum wage, in terms of actually what your point is covering the cost.
The minimum wage for Dublin alone is 14.90. Sorry, the living wage should be 14.90. We were advised to raise it to that. With a child, it goes up to 17.50. If your minimum wage jobs used to be the preserve of college students. Mm. This was the kind of idea. Entry level
Mac jobs.
Students,
we call
Mac
them.
Jobs. Mm. Now what's happening is, and this is happening all over the world, these jobs are now becoming full-time jobs. Mm. People are in this situation for 3 or 4 years where they're still on minimum wage. Then they start having kids and they're still on minimum wage. And in a lot of the restaurants in Dublin, and we know the Ivy was doing it, and lots of them are taking tips as another revenue stream. They're not even paying them. We won't get a suit here, but my own partner worked in a restaurant where she wasn't getting even the minimum wage. Mm. And the restaurant themselves were taking the wages, not the wages, the tips, divvying them up and then giving them to them at the end of the week. And they were always roughly around 120. So, you know, like they're like, and I just said, what's going on here? Why is not kind of, they said, none of us are part of the union. So, you know, they didn't have a strong union in there, like, you know.
I suppose, this is a lovely way of coming to where we are now. When you looked at the statistics that came out from the poll yesterday, in the 25 to 35 year old category, if Sinn Féin's vote on its own is over the combined vote of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And that is because of that's lived experience of that generation who are saying, I'm struggling to pay rent or I'm living at home. I have no hope of this. You sold me a promise, go to college, get an education, come out and you've thrown it back in my face. They're lived experience. As you said, the government
doesn't correlate with what the government's basically promised them.
But they then go, but the economy is booming and you're going, but on the backs of.
Yeah.
These people.
And what's the point of having a booming economy and having full employment if your job is 6 hours away from where you live? Mm. You don't get time to spend with your family. The whole point of work, work is so you can have a quality of life. But the idea, this kind of idea that, well, people who work hard, everybody works hard. Mm. All work is laborious, but no matter what it is. You know what I mean? But they think there's some people that are more deserving of it than people who aren't. And that is a form of classism that is at the root of everything. And now they put up people like, you know, the posters outside from a number of different individuals who come from working class backgrounds who basically go to work for Fine Gael. Yeah. And you go, why is this? And I do think that at a point in the late 70s, and I know some politicians that are of that age, it was a disparate political entity that took on people from all forms of political ideology. Some of them might have even been left of centre, even leftists, and probably still in the party. Gareth Fitzgerald, Rock said this to me, you know, the Just Society.
Yeah.
Fracker doesn't believe in that. He doesn't believe in that at all. You know what I mean? Like, so you have people within that party who feel that and I know this, that Fine Gael has been dragged too far right, both economically, politically, and this neoliberal kind of attitude that they have to people, just poor people in general. I can see that there are people within Fine Gael who are now kicking themselves, saying, why didn't we back Simon Coveney?
I think there's an element of that, but I would say they are a minority. And I think that when I was looking at what I was struck by and have been struck by, and I suppose having looked at the housing crisis in particular, seen is there is the social class divide, which has, and we know inequality has become more entrenched.
Yes.
The social class divide has worsened, but the emergence of the generational divide, I think, has been the biggest kind of factor that is underlining this kind of dissent. Because when you look at it, and it started back with austerity.
Yeah.
It started back in 2010 when basically, and you know, we could say that a generation was shafted, was screwed in terms of debt, in terms of, we look at the paying conditions of all new public entrants that were coming on board. I see it myself in the universities in terms of ourselves, and you know, that prior to, I was unfortunate to get my PhD after 2008, and suddenly we were hit with contracts, as opposed to 2 years prior, people were getting permanent contracts and tenure. But that rippled throughout the society, that the generation after that has been shafted, and you can see it in the housing crisis most obviously. So there's a social class divide, but there's a huge generational divide, and I think that's,
and that's the thing. I think that kind of idea of class is anybody who just isn't, it doesn't matter where you're from, what you sound like, who you are, what your parents did. You, between the age of 18 and 35, and you grew up in this country in the last number of years, you will never earn the same amount of assets that the previous generation did.
The social contract has been broken.
You will earn less. We are the first. They are the first generation of Irish citizens since the foundation of the state who will earn less and make more and gain less assets than the previous generation. That is a step backwards. Mm. And what's constantly galling, the thing that is so infuriating for people, is to listen to politicians like Varadkar, like Regina O'Doherty, like Owen Murphy, and like Simon Harris talk about it as if there's a level playing field and that everybody's like, we're getting on grand, whereas people on the ground can see that they can't. You're like, if you're between the ages of 18 and 55, you're more likely, and some are saying this, you know, what's the thing about rising, like, you know, the left. The really insulting thing, I think, to many people who are between the ages of 18 and 40 and whatever, the really insulting thing is, they're like, how dare they? How could they ever vote for Sinn Féin or any left-wing party?
Mm.
It's not that they don't know anything about the Troubles or the past. Mm. Reading in the Years is the most popular television programme on RTE. Yeah. The idea that we don't have one of the most educated generations of young people in any epoch of Irish civilization ever is just insulting. So what's happening is you have a mainstream media that are doing intellectual loop-de-loops to try and understand why anybody would vote for a left-wing party. Well, they just don't know about the Troubles. Yeah, they do. And if they're 18, they've literally just come from 10 years of learning about Irish history. They know more than anyone else. But they care more about the fact that there's fucking black mould in their corner of their room. They care more about the fact that they're 35 and they're still living at home with their parents. They care more about the fact that they're about one paycheck away from becoming homeless than they do about the Troubles, than they do about the fascistic origins of Fine Gael, about what Fianna Fáil was in 1922. They know what 1981 was. And it's not that they don't care. They do. And they understand how seismic and how awful and how troubling, not troubling, terrible murder happened. They get that. They know that. But the fact of the matter is that they're living in 2020, not 1989, not 1998, not 1932, not 1922. They're living now. The most prescient thing on their minds is, will this landlord throw me out by telling me that his cousin or his nephew is moving in? Will I have a neighbour tomorrow, or will I have an Airbnb guest? Will I have that same kind of opportunities? Will I have the ability to live what has become a life delayed? And this is just happening for them. It's an entire generation of people, especially people in their 30s, who are going, I want to live here, but I don't want to have to move away again. The biggest problem that this government doesn't seem to understand is we were saved a lot of the kind of turmoil that countries like Portugal and Greece and Spain experienced in the period between 2010 and 2020. And the reason for that is because we basically, in the same way we have warehoused our poor people into hotels and homeless hubs, we outsourced our young people to the four corners of the globe. And as ecological disaster and war, which will be two of the defining aspects of the 21st century, increase, those bridges to those countries that are English-speaking countries that you can emigrate to, the bridges of emigration will be drawn up. And you're going to have that generation you were talking about, Rory, that have been screwed over, have been left behind. They will be stuck here. They won't be able to go somewhere else unless they have another language. And that's when people start, you know, that's when real kind of rage starts to foment against kind of like the situations that they find themselves in. And you'll find things, there'll be more kind of house takeovers, there'll be more actions against, you know, unless they are able to absolutely radically reverse all of those austerity policies of the last 10 years. And another thing that drives me absolutely bonkers, and I know I've gone off on a whole fucking rant here, but the thing that drives me bonkers is Fianna Fáilers and Fine Gael saying, we got the country and it was broken and we did what we did. Yeah, you introduced austerity policies, but you're not basically getting rid of those austerity policies.
No.
You used the cover of the crash as a shield to instigate mass overhauls of the social welfare system that you as a political party ideologically had a problem with. And this is what I meant at the very start. I said, I don't think they understand the ideology. The ideology of that Thatcherism thing in Hayek. No, but basically the idea that, you know, the welfare state, the state shouldn't be looking after people. We need to instigate this primacy of the individual kind of thing. For example, and I will be talking about it on any kind of chance I get. 2014, they bring in the lone parent payment cut. Brought in by a Labour government, Labour minister, I should say, in conjunction with Fine Gael. They cut down the amount of money a single parent, both woman or man, whatever situation the family was in, when the child reaches 7. They promised them world-class childcare. But what they did was they just cut the payment. And then the world-class childcare didn't come. And what that was a kind of form of social engineering. They, in these groups, whatever it is, the golf club, that myth, oh sure, there's people out there having babies just to get the dole. There's people out there having babies just to get free houses.
Yeah.
Well, there's no free houses. They don't exist. There's no social houses. That's the problem we're in. The money doesn't exist now. So they cut it down to the age of 7. So now you have an entire generation of young people who, and a cousin of mine works for a charity. And essentially, it's, I won't tell you where, but it's in another country. The idea is that children get in trouble between the hours of 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. when they're left unsupervised. That's when they get themselves in trouble. When there's nobody around, they've left school and their parent might still be in work. And that situation happens continually. They have created an entire generation of latchkey kids under this failed Thatcherite social engineering experiment to get people off the social welfare payment and into a job, regardless if they're physically able, mentally able, if the child is even able for their parent to live. There was no kind of dispensation put forward for any parent who maybe said, I know I'm going to lose this payment at the age of 7, when the child reaches 7, but I really can't because my child is maybe a handful and he needs a lot more care and attention. It was like, no, gone. That payment's gone. Done. And the social ill effects of that, that's an effect of austerity. And it's what you said in 2010 when they instituted all these austerity policies. That's when the rot set in.
And you're
we're picking up the pieces for that for generations, because all of the attendant problems of a child that is left on its own, that doesn't have childcare, and his mother or father are out working and there's nobody there to look after them. Look, that's a time bomb waiting to happen. Mm. These are kids that now are basically left to their own devices when actually they need care, attention, you know, at the most formative part of years of their lives. And to say that as well, it's something that disproportionately affected women.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that as well.
Of course.
That, like, if it was all men, that was, there was this kind of effect. No, that affected women primarily. And they let it happen.
The biggest group in homelessness, it's lone parent mothers.
Lone parent mothers.
And their kids.
And there is one, and sorry, to finish that whole point, St. Vincent de Paul did a report, released it in April last year. One-fifth of all mothers are living in poverty. Sorry, one-fifth of all lone parents.
Yeah.
Shouldn't differentiate between. It's one-fifth of all lone parents are living in poverty. And before social transfers, it's almost half are at risk of slipping into social deprivation and poverty.
And
we let that, and they won't reverse that cut. And they keep saying, oh, we have to do what we did. The patient was on the floor. The patient needed CPR. Well, the patient is up and around. In economic terms, the patient is strutting down the halls. And he's doing a fucking loop-de-loop. He's doing the waltz. And they're still telling him, still need to keep him on a diet.
Ibecker outwarning us again today. You know, we got Ibecker outwarning us again today, saying, you know, demands for wage inflation, they make us uncompetitive. Mm. And demands, and then, you know, and anything else that any of these left, these people that are thinking of voting left, capital to flee. And I made the point.
Give me an example. You guys know, where has capital flight happened? In any country that has moderately increased taxes on major corporations,
I'll give you the real. Okay, so in a normal functioning economy that's not a tax haven, corporate tax receipts are somewhere between 9 and 11.5%. Ireland is over 20% of our total, total gross tax receipts.
Tax, yeah.
So that's a real red flag. We're a tax haven.
Tax haven, yeah.
However, you've made the point that won't come into effect, because our industry, none of the people, by the way, none of these radicals are saying, let's get rid of our tax haven status. Not even Sinn Féin or
just saying, get the multinationals to pay the proper tax.
But Rory, it's the suggestion that what we call the economy that's in the IFSC that we know puts through, you know, generally the size of the Irish economy every month flows through the IFSC, and we don't touch it. We don't look at it.
The flow of income. That's where our GDP goes through.
And we're not going to worry about that, because it's money we don't have.
It's not ours.
We don't tax it. And we're basically, I always use the analogy, we're like a waven pipe, and it's letting it pass through here, and we're hoping that because the waven pipe passes through here, that there's a guy who has to service the waven pipe, and he's charging a fee. And that's where you get your tax consultants, your accountants,
there's an entire industry based around tax avoidance and taxation in this country. And this is the point. Taxing zero of zero still give you zero. Mm. We don't get anything out of it anyway. Mm. So what's the point?
But
we're essentially selling our souls,
beggaring our neighbours, by the way. And
as they said, we're defrauding the revenue systems of our European allies and developing countries all over the world to enrich ourselves.
Sustainable. It's not sustainable as a revenue source. This. It could turn off overnight. And
Stiglitz said this 20 years ago. He said he goes, fair play to them for getting themselves. Restarting their economy. This is pre-crash. Joseph Stiglitz said, you know, it's good, but he said, but they never diversified.
Mm-hmm. And the whole, you know, back
we
to
never
your
diversified
point,
into other businesses. Sorry.
Back to your point about austerity, because I think that's fundamental, because it hasn't, you're absolutely right to bring it, because it hasn't been in the media narrative, and they've allowed Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael engage in this dichotomy or pretend dichotomy of, well, we, you know, you crashed the economy and then we came in and fixed it, and they kind of just argue back over, you know, how you did. And when you actually go, they both made choices that reduced social housing, like basically obliterated the social housing budget, which meant we have this housing crisis. They both destroyed the community development and youth services sector, absolutely cut them apart, which in part explains why more young people have engaged in drug gangs and in absolute exclusion.
If you create a vacuum,
they also, just to finish, because they also absolutely cut and destroyed the health service, which explains another large part, our basically continuing health crisis. So all these crises go back to the very policies they implemented. And the point was they had a choice.
Yeah.
They could have made different choices. They could have decided, actually, do you know what? We'll change our debt arrangement. We'll push the Europe and the ECB, which they could have pushed harder for in terms of debt deals. We'll also implement a wealth tax. We'll also use NAMA, for example, to actually invest in housing rather than just fire sailing all our assets.
Yeah.
So they had choices, and they thought the Irish people were stupid.
Yeah.
And stupid enough to buy that argument. And what people have said is actually no. Now we can see it.
But the Irish,
we're living it.
But the Irish people
and you're lying.
Great. Aren't the Irish people great like that? Because we sat quietly. And it was the same with, people say that Irish water was beaten by people in the streets, and that scared them. But what really scared them was the fact that when they kept saying the majority of people are paying, and people looked at the statistics, it was literally 240,000 people had returned to direct debits, folks. Mm. The rest of the people said they threw that bill in the bin, and they said, knock on my door.
They like the constitution when they say that things are going to be unconstitutional, like in terms of
rent freezes.
But the constitution, like, is it Article 46 says, you know, there's an imperative on the government of the day to protect the social, but it's not legally binding.
It's the social policy
yeah.
parts of the constitution that aren't legally, but they're not enforceable by a court of law.
But I can't understand why any party isn't jumping on this and saying that let's have a referendum, make it legally binding.
Exactly.
So if anything happens in the future, we can say, well, actually, you know what, you want to cut spending on housing, you want to cut spending on all these things, you can't, because we are legally bound by our constitution to do so. But they won't do it. It goes back
back to the election, because we need to get, are we seeing the repeal movement, the movement, you know, of young people who've been shafted by this generation? Are they going to actually get out and vote and express what we're clearly seeing, their desire for a very different Ireland?
I think they will. As I said, you know, the kind of echo chambers that can happen on social media and stuff like that, you know, really shouldn't be taken for...
No, they're not a constituency.
They're not a constituency.
And neither should polls.
Yeah, neither should polls. So there is a kind of thing of, you know, stupid fucking phrase, I hate saying it, like, but, you know, feet on the ground and stuff, you know, people like, I sound like one of these politicians, they're talking about hurling, you know. It's like,
ground. Oh, well, you have to use some hurling now.
It's ground.
There's been so many, come on.
Ground hurling, you know what I mean? Senior hurling, hurling from the ditch. Jesus Christ. I suppose, like, it is, and I've seen people, school friends who, because, you know, Facebook is kind of a place for, you know, and I've seen people actually talk about capital flight in a weird way, but not in a kind of really basic way. It's like, oh, we can't put in Sinn Féin because all the corporations will go away.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's the basic kind of thing. And I was like, I just said to my guys, what are you talking about? Why would they go away? Mm. All of a sudden, because, like, you know, but, like, so the project fear is the thing that's kicking in at the moment.
Yeah.
So I think what's really important is getting people out to vote, knowing that the day after the election, if a left-wing government forms, the bureaucracy, the apparatchiks, the entire thing stays the same. Mm. There's just going to be a new head, and we'll keep on trucking along, and the policies will come in, and they'll take time. It's not as radical as they think it is.
No.
And what the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil kind of like apparatus are trying to tell people is, what they're saying is that there is, you know, essentially like, turn off the lights if you hire. But
they're saying Venezuela.
Venezuela. Yeah. This is, what about Venezuela? What about Cuba? All these kind of things. Nothing's going to happen.
Nonsense.
All of the parties of the left in this country are advocating for what is a very, very moderate version of social democracy, which is practiced by the majority of democracies on the mainland of Europe. And not even as extreme as the Nordic countries. Said this before, and I'll say it here again. We had an opportunity in 2009 to introduce a type of New Deal era style, Roosevelt-esque socialist democracy. Something that is being advocated by Bernie Sanders and AOC. And we didn't. We didn't get the New Deal. We got the old deal. We got the train back on the tracks or whatever cost deal. Mm. And now what's happening is people are actually waking up to the idea that this fear-mongering that the world is going to end all of a sudden if you start to protect the environment, protect workers, actually give people safe and equitable society to live in. This kind of nonsense.
Build public housing on a major
scale. Build public
scale.
Housing, yeah. Like what they did was, look, I said, just to go back to something I said at the very beginning about the ideology. The ideology is driven by things, a hatred of social welfare, a hatred of poor people getting free things. That's what I meant about they don't understand the ideology. That's kind of what it is. But behind it, there is a much more sinister ideology of, you know, things like resource starvation. You know, give the people less and they can do more with it. And this is, I'm seeing them talking now about the healthcare service as well. Sure, we're throwing money now at the healthcare service and we can't get it. Here's but, just on that.
But isn't the problem a left government isn't possible because the bloody left won't work together and offer an alternative?
That's not true.
I think that is categorically.
But it is true.
How is it true?
Because they haven't organised a voting pact. They haven't actually put together a common message.
Did you think 3 weeks ago, did you think there was going to be enough of a vote for left people to even have that conversation?
Yes, I've been arguing for it for a long time.
3 weeks ago, did you think that that Sinn Féin believed that there was enough of a vote there for them to consider being the largest party in government? Answer that honestly.
No, I've made the argument for years about the left needed to work together. But that's an important point because part of the opportunity being lost is that the left hadn't its shit together and wasn't actually offering a coherent alternative.
I get you. But what I'm saying to you is, do not think for one second that that rules out the fact that they can't sit down on Monday morning and say,
"Of course,
we have the numbers."
Yes,
and but let's talk about it as a positive. Let's not.
But actually, you know who is the biggest stumbling block that the left has are the leading parties of the left, the iterations of the Green Party, and the iteration of the Labour Party, the Irish iterations of those pan-European movements, are not really left parties. There are young people in Labour, and I know them and have met them, and they are leftists. They're proper leftists. There are young people in the Greens, and I've met them and I've chatted to them, and they are leftists. Eamon Ryan is not a leftist. Brendan Howland is not a leftist. Brendan Howland is like centre-right, and it's like when, and we've seen, and people don't forget this. This is one of the things, like, you know, they have an opportunity now. If they go into government again, Labour, not the Greens, it won't affect them as much. But if Labour goes into government with another Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael government and props them up and keeps them in there, this will be their last election. There won't be any coming back.
I believe that's true.
Any of the other kind of leftists who are in that group, and I really feel bad because young Labour are doing good things. And Kieran, is it Humphreys?
Kieran Ahern.
No.
Oh, I know.
Kevin Humphreys.
Kevin Humphreys is fighting a good fight there in Dublin Central, you know, against Airbnb and so forth, you know. He's doing proper, like, left-wing kind of things, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he's looking out for people. So, I don't know. I think what's hindering it is they could be the lightning rod around which the left could galvanise. But what's actually happened is Eoin Óibrín has become the lightning rod around young people saying, hold on a second, that chancellor who's running our housing at the moment is a person who, it's not that he lacks empathy, he just isn't capable of the job. And again, I don't want to get personal, but he doesn't know anybody that's homeless. He doesn't know anybody that's living in a tent. He doesn't know the realities of what it is when you go into a hostel and there's people doing heroin in there and you don't feel safe in it, so you have to go and live in a tent down in the canal. And then when someone dies, they're like, oh, it's not my fault. So people see that. Then they see an individual like Eoin Óibrín, who is, you know, smart, has quite literally written a book on public housing in Ireland, one of the only people in there to have done that, and said, who do I want in that position? This guy doesn't know any homeless people and doesn't seem to care. Or this guy, who's quite literally written a book about it, seems to be an intellectual and has an approach and an idea and a radical plan to shift it. And people started to say, hold on a second. It did become a thing on the left about politicians of personalities. They went, Piers Doherty seems a lot smarter than some of these people in Fine Gael. Eoin Óibrín seems a lot smarter than some of these people in Fianna Fáil. And they went, I wouldn't mind actually having some of these people in government ministerial positions. And now the rest of the left parties have gone, oh, actually, you know what? We might be in with a shot here.
Yeah.
So I think the old splitters kind of aspect and, you know, whatever it is, that I do question some of the tactics of the left, some of the left parties running two candidates in constituencies where they will only get one. And I just don't get it. And then also, like, I was out in my hometown today. Sinn Féin are only running one candidate. They would have easily got another person over the line.
They didn't see it coming.
But you know what it was? You know what it was? And the media were like going, one last point. Remember, the media were going in the local elections. And it's so funny how, like, kind of like governments take from whatever it is.
Yeah.
They take from whatever they see, they want to see. Oh, people really care about the environment. What about housing? No. That was what Bracker and all said. No, yeah. they don't care about that. It's climate. That's what they're coming up on the door. The reason why Sinn Féin did so well in the 2014 elections was because people wanted a change in housing policy. This happened in urban centres. Then what happened was in 2014, not a lot of people know this. Not that not a lot of people know this, but I'm talking to people about local government. Local government doesn't have, all the town councils are gone. Like, they just got rid of them in the 2014 Local Government Act. No, they're gone. Mm. They got rid of them. Hundreds of them. So now there's, and then the amalgamated councils. We have the lowest level of representation in all of Europe at local government level. And you know this, you've said this before, Rory. What they do is then, they ring fence themselves from getting the hassle for why there's no public housing. It has to do with the council. But then they don't allow the council the powers to build.
Yeah.
They don't allow them to borrow. They have to sell public land in order to build infrastructure.
They hollowed out the architects.
Yeah.
They hollowed out the engineers. They basically obliterated the housing departments of the local authorities. So when they turned around and said, oh, we have a bit of money here, will you build a bit of housing? The local authorities said, there's no one here. The lights are literally out. You turned them off.
The point I was making, the reason why then in 2019, Sinn Féin lost out badly, it was because people in places like Tala, which I know, and where I am, Dublin City Centre, went, well, I'm not going to vote for that local council again because I wanted you to fix the housing crisis and you did nothing.
Mm.
But the reason they did nothing is because they didn't have the powers to do anything. So now the reason why Sinn Féin, and they should have known this, the reason why they're getting the bump is people went, we don't need to go, we need to go straight to the organ grinder, not the monkey. Do you know what I mean? Like, so they need to go to the National Assembly. And this is a problem with Irish politics. The centralisation of power toward the Dáil is a huge, huge problem. And there should be, power should be designated further out to the community. This is what Saoirse McHugh was talking about. The decentralisation. I know people have a time where, you know, they don't trust local councillors and it is quite tough. And I just spent a month in Kerry, you know, and it's very isolated down there. And, you know, like towns are hollowed out and there's nobody in some of these towns. And I can understand the policies of why some people get elected and some people don't. But what happened was, I really wish they didn't take the local elections as for what they were, because people didn't show up because they just went, there's no point showing up for a council election because the council can't do anything other than fix a speed bump.
Yeah.
And what I want is radical nationwide change that fixes health, housing and all of those things. So they should have ran more candidates. But what's going to happen is in this election, what I can say is if there's anybody that listens to this, that is young, that's the only thing I would say to you. I'm not telling you how to vote. I'm just telling you to get out and vote. We might not get the decision on the left, broad left unity that we need this time. We could do. I think we will. I hope we will. But I know this. There will probably be another election in 2 years' time. Mm. And by God, if candidates like AOC and candidates like Bernie Sanders the world over become popular, this is what Fine Gael are.
That's what they're afraid of.
No, they're afraid of that. But they'll just adopt those policies as well.
Yes.
Because this is what I meant at the very beginning of the discussion.
They will go with, whatever
the wind is blowing. Yeah, they don't have an ideology. Yeah. They basically have one ideology, and that's what's popular and what will get us into power.
I think you're absolutely right, and we would completely echo in terms of people need to get out and vote. But I will come back at one point, and Tony, can you imagine if Mary Lou, Eamon Ryan, Brendan Howland, Roisin Shortall, Richard Boyd Barrett. But no, I'm not being negative.
Can
you imagine if they stood up at a press conference on Thursday evening
and
said, do you want an alternative government? If you do, vote for all of us.
Yeah.
How impactful would that be?
It would be huge, but what you're asking for is not going to happen. So why even put it out there?
I think it could be possible. If we are really serious about an alternative broad left government, then they should do something like that. As dramatic.
As dramatic as that. They could do it. They could do it on Thursday evening. On the net, like the next, you know.
They're all standing on the plinth, I suppose. They're all standing, aren't they?
It's Wednesday night, I think. Tomorrow night, they're going to do.
Tonight, they have the tree
that's
on.
That's tonight, is it?
Yeah.
And then tomorrow, then, Thursday, I think they've got the rest of them on prime time. But I think, look, Sinn Féin are going to go into the business. People keep on saying this, they're going to go into the business of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. No, they're not. They are not going to make the same mistake that Labour made in 2011. If they become either the third or the second biggest party, they will bide their time, and they should. And they will allow whatever party it is to continue to mess up, because the policies of allowing the private market to solve our social issues will not solve those social issues. And when they try neoliberalism again for the seventh and eighth time to fix a crisis that got them into that position, then people are really going to go, oh, this does have to do with the inefficacy and the inability and ideological. Well, that's essentially we're run by a bunch of ideologues that are unwilling to change. And but what I said earlier on about the, you know, the AOC thing, like, you know, they're like chameleons. I think they'll just go a lot of the time. If they take a pasting, they'll come back and they'll be like, they'll be talking about, you know.
Emmett, they've already started. They're saying the Taoiseach was today talking about people want change and we will be that change party. You know,
they didn't care about the environment until the fucking local elections.
And that is it. And they are political chameleons.
Yeah. Like,
get out and vote, guys.
Yeah, no.
Get off your arse. Get your family. Get your friends. Get out and vote.
They are political comedians. Just to reiterate that, they are political comedians, but the Fine Gael party have a huge problem with poor people.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
a Victorian mindset.
Yeah, it is. And this is one of the reasons for the celebration of the B specials, you know?
Yeah.
But the whole idea of the Victorian model of policing is to protect property from the mob.
Right.
So if you basically exalt an armed rebellion, and there's people in Fine Gael are incredibly uneasy about the celebrations around 1916, incredibly uneasy around our revolutionary birth. The idea of people taking up arms and, you know, challenging an authority figure is kind of something that's incredibly undemocratic. So they tried to do that thing with the Beast Special and they understood why they did it, but it blew up in their face. So,
Emmett, we could keep going all night long, and so could you, clearly. But I think the message is, this is a moment in time. You can actually have historic moments. You can be part of it. You can actually make history and a real contribution to change if you get out and vote. Vote for change. Vote broad left all the way across.
See
change.
And remember as well, when you're on if you want to vote for that party, go all the way down. Just if you don't want to see Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil again, vote left.
Yeah.
And just exclude Fine Gael.
And maybe we'll put the call out. All the leaders of the left should get up Thursday evening and say, you want an alternative government, here we are.
I'm going to do a remix of Beyonce's To the Left, To the Left. Every little box in a tick. I'm still working it out. I haven't got all the kinks. I haven't got all the kinks done yet.
You keep talking, right? You just keep going. Right. Listeners, we'll leave an extended podcast.
Please stick around for extra.
Of Emmett.
Extras.
Just going.
Yeah,
I go for a pint. I'll talk to you all soon, folks. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.